This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon and welcome to the Daily Digest on The Bigger Picture. I'm Sharmila Ganesan and with me are Juliet Jacobs and Lim Soo Ann. As always, we have two stories for you today.
Yeah, so in our first story, we're going to look at the ongoing Australian bushfire crisis, where many Aboriginal Australians have expressed grief and anxiety over damage to the landscape and to cultural and sacred sites. But millennia-old Indigenous forest management tactics may also be the key to reducing the severity of the of future bushfires. So we're going to explore that. So the ongoing bushfires in Australia, you know, they've been framed in so many ways. I think anywhere you go, it's just there's so many different angles, mm-hmm. you know, about covering how the crisis is playing out. It's an escalation of the global climate crisis, for example. You know, they've framed it as the result of government inaction. Even here on the Daily Digest, we zoomed in to focus on the plight of koalas, mm-hmm. you know, in the burning areas of the country. However, another story we feel really needs to be told, and that is of the Aboriginal Australians.
Yeah, so for many First Nation Australians, the fires are not only an economic or ecological loss, even though these perspectives are important to them too. The fires carry a much deeper meaning because their identities and traditions are deeply bound up with the Australian landscape. And so when that landscape goes up in smoke, important sites related to those traditions also are lost.
Yeah, and you know, for an example, members of the Yuin people in New South Wales, they reported to The Guardian that many important cultural sites have gone up in flames in the region between Gulaga and the Mumbala Mountain, and this is part of a longer chain of important cultural locations for them.
So Warren Foster, who is a UN man from Wallagai Lake, he recently expressed his views also to The Guardian. He said, quote unquote, "These are the worst bushfires in our history. Our people never knew fires like this. The ancestors would be wild, I reckon, about what's happened to the country, to our totem animals. There are hundreds of sites, male ceremony places, sites on our sacred mountain that burned. Not only UN land, but all over, there'd be thousands of places destroyed by fires. We need our country to be healthy so that we can be healthy as well. We need the animals. If that is all lost, our spirits die when they die. So this might be a wake-up call for them now to listen to us Indigenous people and how we do our cultural burning. It's time for us to ask how to look after the country."
So he wasn't the only one writing about, we're talking about the fires. So in the Guardian, Aboriginal Australian writer Lorena Allam wrote and expressed her own pain at seeing the landscape destroyed by the fires. She said, and I'm quoting here, "Some of these places have never burned, not once in my lifetime, let alone all at once. Like you, I'm watching in anguish and horror as fires lay waste to precious Yuin land, taking everything with it, lives, homes, animals, trees. But for First Nations people, it is also burning up our memories, our sacred places, all the things that make us who we are. It's a particular grief to lose forever what connects you to a place in the landscape. Our ancestors felt it, our elders felt it, and now we are feeling it all over again as we watch how the mistreatment and neglect of our land and waters for generations and the pig-headed foolishness of coal-obsessed climate change denialists turn everything and everyone to ash."
That really encapsulates it, I think.
Yeah. And for some Aboriginal peoples, the scale and destruction of the fires is also tragic because of the sidelining of millennia-old Indigenous forest management tactics. So it's called by various names, including cool burning and cultural burns. And what these planned smaller-scale burnings of sections of forest actually have many uses. So, for example, by burning up potential fuel for fires like small twigs and dried leaves, a natural bushfire would have less fuel to burn, and then there would be less chance of that a bushfire getting too hot and getting out of control.
So generally, Indigenous cultural burning is more common in the northern Australia, where in the southern states it is sometimes done, depending on the needs and desires of the local communities. So in Australia as a whole, there is a long history of Western attempts to silence or eradicate these Indigenous beliefs and practices, and apparently cultural burning is no exception.
However, especially after the start of the ongoing bushfire crisis, there have been calls for a revival of this technique and for its use alongside Western firefighting methods have actually become stronger. But some Aboriginal Australians, like Shannon Foster, who is a knowledge keeper for the Dharawal people, says that attention on Indigenous techniques should have happened earlier. Mm-hmm. You know, Shannon's role sees her transmitting information that she learned from elders to the next generation. And she believes that while firefighting authorities have carried out Western hazard reduction burning, these methods aren't working. So she expressed to the BBC, she said, the current controlled burns destroy everything. It's a naive way to practice fire management, and it isn't hearing the indigenous people who know the land best.
Yeah, and she also goes on to explain that as opposed to hazard burning, cultural burning protects the environment holistically. So cool burning replenishes the earth, it enhances biodiversity, and as the ash fertilizers and the potassium encourages flowering. So it's a complex cycle that's based on cultural, spiritual and scientific knowledge.
So here's a clip that we found from Indigenous fire practitioner Victor Stephenson, who spoke with ABC News Australia, this was back in November, about Aboriginal Australian fire management practices.
When you look at Indigenous use on country, fire is a tool to look after land, bring back food. It's a tool for the crafting. We need to be looking after it and applying it the right way for what needs fire. Otherwise, it'll turn around and it'll bite us. It's about burning at the right time for that particular country so that the fire is not the wrong fire. And then it's putting that fire in the landscape the right way so that you're not putting fire everywhere or too much fire into the country. Most of the time, put one fire and allow that to burn in a circle so that 360 degrees the animals can escape. And the fire moves so slowly through the country and peacefully that everything can smell the smoke. This is just the first burn here. It will improve as we move along. When we first came to this country here, it was just full of weed. And we knew that because of the trees and the soils for this country, that there should be a whole lot of different medicines and foods. By burning it, we knew that that would come up, and they would come up. You shouldn't see trees all black and canopies all scorched, no food and just heat in the landscape, bare ground. You're manicuring the land, you're gardening in the country. So the burning windows for our environment is quite large. We have burning seasons all through winter, and we have burning also in storm burn time as well when the rain comes at the end of the year. If we are burning too many ecosystems in one go, that's not the right way to look after country. Every summer I get worried. The only reason why we're seeing all of this degradation to landscape is not just because of climate change, but it's because of bad management. We're setting ourselves backwards immensely when we continue to have wildfires destroying our country. I see the trees all burnt and there's nothing left for the animals. There's just this silence in the air. Most people think that there's no difference in traditional burning and Western burning regimes, but there's a huge difference. If we're just using Western mentality to manage landscapes, where they just fly over the top and drop bombs on it, or they're just looking at hazard reduction or solely for the protection of people, we're going to miss all those layers, and we're going to continue to see a degraded landscape. And life and property is the whole landscape. The more that we are looking after country the right way, the more we're going to be able to get a handle on the wildfires. Indigenous fire management can be applied in any setting. Obviously, it's easy in a remote area, but the knowledge is even more needed in an urban setting, because to burn the right time is the cooler and safer. The Indigenous fire knowledge is thousands of years old. And when we look at Aboriginal burning, it's a spiritual thing. It's an insult, just to sum it up in two words, like cool burning. In the old times, there used to be fire knowledge holders, and those knowledge holders were crucial to be at every burn. And that's where we need to be again. We need to have these knowledge holders working within the mainstream and working within the Rural Fire Service so that they feed into burning within the national parks and assisting with private landholders, but above all, strengthening the Aboriginal culture of Australia. We have knowledge here, and if we jump on that opportunity, then we're going to better our culture, enrich our communities and enrich opportunities for our younger generations and evolve the Australian culture together and closer to the landscape.
So that was Victor Stephenson, an Indigenous fire practitioner.
So as a final point, it's actually worth remarking that not all experts agree on the universal value of these Indigenous burning practices. So Associate Professor Noel Preece is a former National Parks Ranger who wrote the first fire manual for Central Australian Park Reserves. And he notes that Aboriginal Australian burning practices are important and can reduce potential bushfire fuel on the ground from 10 tonnes to 1 tonne. However, he claims that they can only offer protection from moderate fires and argues that they are ultimately about hazard reduction and not all-out prevention. He says with the recent catastrophic conditions of humidity and high winds, nothing could stop these fires.
So Professor Preece also points to a more insidious fact, which is that many Aboriginal peoples were removed in the past from their original territories. And this means that effective management of the landscape involves an important relearning process. So sometimes, and he says that sometimes some areas for cooler cultural burnings aren't in the right conditions at the same time that volunteer firemen have the opportunity to conduct them. So in some types of forest environments, cooler burn simply won't be as effective as a hotter burn in removing that potential bushfire fuel.
So according to Dr. Richard Thornton, he's the CEO of the Bushfire and Natural Hazards Cooperative Research Centre, I guess, you know, what he says is cultural burns are perhaps best placed in a larger structure of fire management that uses Western practices as well. So I guess it's just taking everybody's knowledge, right? It's a complementing thing
And, sort of respecting the knowledge that we could learn from people who have been sidelined for much too long.
Exactly. Yeah.
So if you have any thoughts on that, you can actually tweet us at BFM Radio. You can also WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 or call us at 03-7733-2900. We will be back after a short break. This is The Daily Digest on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.